noticed that his usual ruddy complexion had an undeniably yellow cast. Dr. Corbell said that he would be going into the hospital that afternoon and wondered if I'd take over his undergraduate course. Our time is up for today. I hope you will join me next time when we continue with Extraordinary Ordinary People by Condoleezza Rice. This is Rosemary Scalessa for GARS, the Georgia Radio Reading Service.
That's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us for the Noon Book Hour. We hope you'll join us again Monday for our next installment from the Recording Library of West Texas.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 58 and clear. Tonight it will be cloudy with a low in the low 50s. Then, tomorrow, cloudy with a high in the low 70s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the low 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Because of technical and production delays, the coronavirus update today will occur in 30 minutes. We'll broadcast the program at 1:30 right after this program.
This program is made available to the IAAIS program share and was recorded at the audio reading service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Entertainment Weekly, and I'm your reader, Chad, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today, I'll be reading articles from the March 2021 issue of Entertainment Weekly. On the cover this month, a portrait of actress, comedian, and singer Maya Rudolph. She wears a white top with two rows of buttons and with pearl-like ornamentation around the collar and pockets. She stands, with hands in pockets, outdoors among shrubs with autumn coloration. The text over her right shoulder, she speaking, Maya Rudolph, the comedy queen on Boys Clubs, Bridesmaids, and Becoming Kamala, by Leah Greenblatt. And I'll begin with that feature article. Long Maya She Reign. All hail the new TV Veep. The royally funny Maya Rudolph gets candid about winning Emmys, her no-pants pandemic, and smashing comedy rules. By Leah Greenblatt. Photographs by Ramona Rosales. Maya Rudolph knows that you know her. Even if she's not quite sure how you're sure that it's, you know, her. I was on a plane recently, well back when we could fly, and the lady was like, do you want an apple? The actress and comedian, 48, recalls. And I went, sure, I'll take one. But she wouldn't hand it to me. She was like, no, do you want an apple? Rudolph not only had to be told that it was a line from Bridesmaids, but that it was, in fact, she, and not her co-star Kristen Wiig, who delivered it. Fans of that scatological 2011 smash are not hard to find. Brad and Angelina once floated over at an award show, Luminous, to let her know how many times they'd watched it at home. Others likely know the Los Angeles native best for 7 years of indelible impressions on Saturday Night Live, including, but not limited to, Oprah, Beyoncé, Donatella Versace, and a salty Bronx talk show host named Jody, and still more for a winning cavalcade of guest turns, The Good Place, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and voice roles, Shrek the Third, The Willoughbys. But in September of 2019, she chanced into what may prove to be the role of a lifetime, or at least as long as term limits go. Then-Senator and current game-changer-in-chief, our Madam Vice President herself, Kamala Harris. Yeah, I smelled it coming, Rudolph says with a laugh, of being summoned back to 30 Rock for the part, even though she officially departed SNL in 2007. I remember when Tina Fey smelled it coming for Sarah Palin. It's funny, it was almost like a red herring early on, when I wasn't on the show anymore and Rachel Dolezal was in the news. Like, I'm going to get that call. It's true, the show's legendary creator and executive producer, Lorne Michaels, tells EW. After Palin's first televised debate, even his doorman told him Faye would be a no-brainer. And for Harris, the pile of Maya memes in his inbox made it equally clear. Now the choice seems not only inspired, but inspiring. There was a moment a couple of weeks before the election, he says, where I thought, wait, is Kamala doing Maya? Over Zoom from her LA home, Rudolph, off-duty, radiates little of the VP's polished power boss energy. With her chopped bob and chicly oversized glasses, in fact, she looks more like an extremely chill version of Noonie, the loopy European art dealer she played so memorably in a string of SNL sketches alongside Fred Armisen. Though her laid-back cadences and the delicate spray of freckles across her cheekbones telegraph a sort of vibey California cool, miles away from the manic rhythms of most comedians. But the historic significance of her latest role is hardly lost on the little girl who grew up biracial in a world with so few models in public life to look to, beyond Lisa Bonet on The Cosby Show. A huge element of working at SNL is the political portion of it, but it's rare to be in on a presidential campaign, Rudolph says earnestly. Knowing that there was a candidate that I resembled so much was so cool in and of itself. I also just felt really lucky that we figured out a way to have fun with her early on, and make her a joyful character. There have been times when you're asked to play up someone's flaws or characteristics that are annoying, or frustrating, or embarrassing. This one feels like a superhero cape I get to don. That cape, alas, can't teleport her to New York. Being the show's resident Harris has meant having to fly back and forth across the country in the midst of a pandemic, leaving her partner of two decades, the director Paul Thomas Anderson, Boogie Nights, There Will Be Blood, and their four children at home. But in a way, wandering was built into her DNA. Her mother is the late soul singer Minnie Riperton. Her father, songwriter Richard Rudolph. Yes, that's Tiny Maya's name that Riperton trills like a five-octave lullaby over the final notes of her 1975 number one hit, Lovin' You. And their L.A. home spilled over with itinerant artists and bohemians. We were on the road with my mom when we were babies, Rudolph remembers. She was like, "You guys are coming with me. I don't like being away from you." So my dad ended up playing guitar with her, and my brother and I spent a lot of time backstage making ourselves laugh, doing goofy stuff, eating weird food, losing teeth in hotels. I got a casino chip when I lost a tooth, and I loved it. Her mother's death from breast cancer at 31, just 2 weeks before Rudolph's 7th birthday, abruptly altered her world. I absolutely feel like I missed out on a lot of stuff in those ways that you assume, because you'll never know, she confesses. Sometimes, when I'd go to a friend's house or a slumber party, I would look through people's bathroom cabinets and peek and see what real girls put on their faces, or how they took care of their skin. Like, I'm too embarrassed to ask, and I don't want any pity parties. So I'm just going to check some stuff out, and I'll report back to myself. Perhaps unsurprisingly, she fell in love with the stage. But, she says, I didn't want to be a boring person who never left home and is just like, oh, I grew up in L.A., and now I'm an actress. So she headed north to UC Santa Cruz, despite the fact that it didn't even have a theater, and one degree in photography later, found herself playing keyboards and singing backing vocals with The Rentals, a loose indie rock collective led by then Weezer bassist Matt Sharp, opening tour dates for mid-90s headliners like No Doubt and Alanis Morissette. Music moved to the passenger seat when Rudolph found a home in The Groundlings, the famed L.A. improv troupe that would introduce her to friends and future co-stars Wig and Melissa McCarthy. Not long after, the other coast, or at least the city and the lore of what I thought Saturday Night Live was, and all of this creativity that was brimming in New York, came calling. Invited to audition for Michaels, she was sure she'd blown her chance. The only thing I really remember was him asking me, "Why do you think you should work here?" And I said, "Because I love wearing wigs." She rolled her eyes. "Oh, that'll do. Yeah, that's good, Maya. It's true, I love wearing wigs. But when you're sitting in front of your idol and you get asked the million-dollar question, 9 times out of 10, you F it up." Clearly, Michaels disagreed. Her 2000 to 2007 run there coincided with one of the show's most fertile creative stretches, in which her own contributions played no small part. Some characters, like Oprah and Donatella, quickly became pop culture legend. A few less successful ones died mercifully on the vine. Condoleezza Rice was one she admits she couldn't crack, and Barack Obama too. "I did it for dress rehearsal, and poor Obama had to see it, and it didn't go great," she recalls ruefully. "I just hadn't figured him out yet. But the minute I heard Fred Armisen do his voice, and Jordan Peele, that's when I heard what the impression was." After the birth of her first child, Pearl Minnie, in 2005, sustaining the show's frenetic pace and bleary 4 a.m. writing sessions proved to be too much. She stayed for one more season, then departed. It was really painful for me, watching from home and seeing my friends be together and do the things that I love the most, she admits. But new projects soon followed, from a Simpsons cameo to a starring role in Sam Mendes's underrated 2009 dramedy, Away We Go. The secret sauce, more often than not, is the involvement of what once might have been called her squad, whether it's SNL alums like Armisen and Amy Poehler, or her old friend, Russian doll star, Natasha Lyonne, with whom she formed the production company Animal Pictures in 2018. They recently released an all-star Netflix special for comedian of the moment, Sarah Cooper. Voice work on animated shows has also proved to be not just a boon to her as a busy mom. Bless the Hearts is in its second season on Fox, but a literal golden opportunity. Last September, her role on Netflix's Big Mouth won her the first Emmy of her career. Then she took home one for playing Harris, too, beating out her own guest turn on The Good Place, which feels like a pretty neat encapsulation of Rudolph's appeal, that she would be recognized for playing America's future first female vice president, a tetchy celestial sitcom judge, and a goat-horned hedonist called the Hormone Monstress in the same year. Rudolph only regrets that her Big Mouth statuette arrived not long ago with the episode title, How to Have an Orgasm, emblazoned across its base, prompting immediate questions from her kids. Really, she deadpans, can't my Emmy just say my name? Now I have to explain what an orgasm is to a 7-year-old. Animation, blessedly, also offered the chance to work steadily through the pandemic in what she fondly calls a no-pant zone, and still left time for certain mandatory lockdown activities. Tiger King, Sourdough. As a family, they've nearly gotten through the Harry Potter books, and long flights to the SNL set finally let her dive deep into Schitt's Creek. Now, when her schedule allows, she can just step into a sound booth. I love that there really is no limit, she says. Some of my characters are monsters, some are dogs, some are just anyone. The rest of Hollywood, though, still has a long way to go, particularly when it comes to seeing in full color. I think it's a strength to be able to play anything, she says of her heritage. And the most heartbreaking thing for me has simply been when I don't get written to be the things that I want to be, that I know I can do. Even with Bridesmaids, which she's happy to learn turns 10 this May, old ideas about race and sex persist. There's no question that when you start to hear more than once that something is, quote-unquote, the female hangover, she trails off, exasperated. And though The Hangover was the film equivalent of, like, comedy Citizen Kane, they're two completely different movies, guys. You're talking about a group of women, a group of people who know their weight, know their worth in comedy. The reputation of SNL as a boys' club, though, she'd like the record to show, is wildly overblown. Michaels, for one, sounds thrilled to have Rudolph back in Studio 8H, and to see where she'll go with her new Biden, Alex Moffat, the cast member who stepped in following Jim Carrey's temporary run. There's something powerful in what she's doing with Kamala, Michael says. We've been in such a dark period, but it feels to me that any glimpse of optimism or hopefulness will help everyone. And I think Maya will be a part of that. It does feel like she's one of my aunties, she says of Harris. I so thoroughly enjoyed when she was just telling it like it is about things that were happening with the president at the time. She's got this infectious joy and charisma, and she's just so damn gorgeous. I loved being able to hook onto that and play the confidence in that. That's a fun game. But a lady, at least not one as creatively restless as Rudolph, cannot live on in-season Saturdays alone. She's politely circumspect about the fact that she could be stepping into Harris's signature pearls and Converse for the next 4 years, and possibly Fate and the Electoral College willing far beyond. When I'm thinking positively, I love the idea, she says. It sounds like a lot, but I'm taking it as it comes. In the meantime, she's been dipping a toe into music again, and would love to maybe make a capsule clothing collection one day. I'm all over the place, she breaks off laughing, and that's exactly where we want her. Accompanying this article, several large photos. In the first, Rudolph stands in a well-manicured garden with a snow-white-colored llama on a leash. Rudolph wears a flowing, floral-patterned dress. In the second, she stands in that same manicured garden, behind a classical-style stone statue of a nude athlete throwing a discus. She wears a different floral pattern dress and runs her fingers through her hair. In the third, she wears a solid green dress and leads a miniature horse on a leash through the garden. In the fourth, she stands on stone steps in the garden wearing a floral dress, her arms spread in an expressive gesture. On the rails of the outdoor staircase are stone lion statues. Also with the article are two smaller photos. In the first, Rudolph sits at a desk, in character as Kamala Harris, wearing a blazer and holding a fly swatter. The caption reads, "Rudolph as then-Senator Kamala Harris in a 2020 VP debate sketch on SNL." And in the second, she stands next to actress Kristen Wiig. The caption reads, "Made for each other. Rudolph and Kristen Wiig in their breakout 2011 hit, Bridesmaids." Also, with this feature article, two sidebars. First, She's All That. Four friends and collaborators share their favorite tales of Rudolph behind the scenes. By Leah Greenblatt. Amy Poehler says, "Such a musical genius. Also such a comedic genius. SNL is like a comedy emergency room, and you really need people who don't panic. I know that sounds obvious, but it's hard. It takes many years on that show to achieve it. And that's what's so awesome when you watch Maya, especially live. She's just a pro. I am a true friend and a true fan at the same time." Paul Feig says, "Half the things we were doing on Bridesmaids would come when we'd be setting up shots, and Kristen and Maya would just be sitting by the monitor, making each other laugh with songs and voices. Just delightful. The fact that people still go back to it over and over again and still get really invested in these characters, it's a total testament to that cast." Natasha Lyonne says, "She really is the person who's your best friend at a sleepover party, pulling her pants above her boobs to do an impression of a dork and making all the girls in their sleeping bags crack up. She's just pure enough of a human being that she's been able to maintain that into adulthood. Her entire system is weird for being a vehicle of joy. I mean, she's just a effin' legend." Kristen Wiig says, "I really believe you can sense a lot about a person when you see them perform. I think what makes her so beloved is that people see that light in her. She is that amazing person. She's supportive and collaborative and just a good human. And I also believe people want to see performers having fun, being silly, and loving what they do. That's Maya." And the second sidebar, more must see Maya. In her 25-year career, Rudolph has delivered big laughs, tender moments, and family fare. Here are some of our favorites. Away We Go, 2009. In between blockbusters like American Beauty and Skyfall, director Sam Mendes helmed this lovely, low-key charmer about expectant young parents, Rudolph and John Krasinski, who set out on a road trip and find a new home. The character moments are small and kooky, but it adds up beautifully. That text by Leah Greenblatt. Forever. Amazon Prime Video, 2018. June, Rudolph, and Oscar, Fred Armisen, are deeply comfortable in their coupledom, too comfortable. What starts as a prickly little riff on monotonous monogamy becomes, in a twist, fantastically existential. Sadly, Amazon had a different definition of forever. After one season, it was gone. That text by Leah Greenblatt. The Good Place, NBC, 2018-2020. Rudolph's goofy yet stern Judge Jen, an eternal figure in the neutral zone, who's obsessed with human things, including podcasts, NCIS, Deadwood, and especially its star Timothy Oliphant, rules on whether Eleanor, Chidi, Jason, and Tahani are Good Place material. No objections to her hilarity here. That text by Gerard Hall. Up All Night, NBC, 2011-2012. She excelled as Oprah on SNL, so why not as a talk show host on a scripted comedy? That was the premise of this two-season sitcom, focusing on Christina Applegate's new mom, Reagan, a producer on her BFF, Ava's daytime talker. Rudolph was zany and comedically commanding, a true star. That text by Gerard Hall. Animation MVP. From Big Mouth and Bless the Hearts to Big Hero 6 and the Angry Birds movies, voice acting roles, like Julia, who tried to seduce and then kill Homer after he refused her advances on The Simpsons, occupy a sweet spot on Rudolph's long list of talents. Up next, Netflix's The Mitchells vs. The Machines. That text by Gerard Hall. Next, in Entertainment Weekly, news and reviews, the most important takes of the month. First, in movies, now playing, Truth to Power. A trio of new dramas torn from real-life headlines test the boundaries of storytelling, by Leah Greenblatt. Justice may follow a long arc, but more than ever lately, it seems to wend its way to a biopic, or at least that's true of several movies out this month, two of which make the case for their real-life counterparts in a way that newsprint or history books likely never could. The story of late Black Panther Fred Hampton has been on screen before, via several documentaries, and more recently, a fine supporting turn by Kelvin Harrison Jr. in last year's busy Aaron Sorkin drama, The Trial of the Chicago Seven. All that pales, though, next to Daniel Kaluuya's powerhouse performance in Shaka King's Judas and the Black Messiah. That's how completely the British actor embodies Hampton, a Chicago native whose perceived radicalism and unquestionable charisma made him a prime target of J. Edgar Hoover's FBI in the late 1960s. Hoover, Martin Sheen, glowering under a thick putty of prosthetics, wanted Black Power neutralized, which meant enlisting an agent, Jesse Plemons, to recruit a petty car thief, Lakeith Stanfield, to infiltrate the local Panther Party, befriend Fred, and ultimately betray him. King, who also co-wrote the script, gives Messiah a lush, high theatrical style, full of artful tableau and restless, rippling energy. But it's Kaluuya, alternately raw, tender, and incendiary, who electrifies every scene he's in. The Mauritanian serves as a similar kind of showcase for its own remarkable star, Tahar Rahim, as Mahamadou Ould Slahi, the accused 9/11 mastermind held for years without charges at Guantanamo. Toggling seamlessly between English, French, and Arabic, he's a mystery even the Oscar bait cast around him. A pleasingly astringent Jodie Foster is his pro bono defender, and Benedict Cumberbatch, the courtly Marine Corps lawyer assigned to prosecute him, struggles to crack. Should Slahi own his crimes, or were they confessed to under unconstitutional torture? Though director Kevin MacDonald, the last King of Scotland, leans into some familiar dramatic beats, the end result still feels like a reckoning. When Ross Ulbricht, Love Simon's Nick Robinson, shouts about taking back our liberty in Tilla Russell's Silk Road, it has a different ring. Ulbricht's idea of freedom meant creating the titular drug hub on the dark web, a Costco-style clearinghouse for everything from Xanax to heroin. Of course, he's only exploiting loopholes, and a circa 2011 cybersecurity squad is soon after him, including a combative veteran cop, Jason Clark, whose bad behavior has recently gotten him consigned to desk duty. Clark is great, but it all feels a little callow. The Social Network redrawn in weed and wispy startup beards. Entertainment Weekly's reviews of those films: Judas and the Black Messiah, A-. The Mauritanian, B+. Silk Road, C+. In books, fiction reviews: No One Is Talking About This, by Patricia Lockwood, 208 pages. No One is officially billed as a novel, though Lockwood, she of the viral poem Rape Joke and fantastically outré 2017 memoir Priest Daddy, is hardly the kind of writer to be held to form. Her latest, accordingly, comes on in a swirl of internet-age irony and remove, less stream of consciousness than a series of small, heady whirlpools. But when its unnamed protagonist's sister gives birth to a baby with a rare genetic disorder, those surreal fragments of social media flotsam and self-regard coalesce into something else, a story of real, analog human feeling, both heartbreaking and stealthily profound. Grade B+. That text by Leah Greenblatt. Yoke, by Mary H. K. Choi, 385 pages. The third novel from YA author Choi, Permanent Record, sneaks up on you with its insight and poignancy. When Jane's estranged sister June gets a dreaded diagnosis, the girls realize how desperately they've always needed each other. Though college-aged Jane's often funny narration vacillates credibly between the conviction that she knows it all and the terror that the world is beyond her grasp, her frequent pop culture references and odes to New York can grow tiresome and distracting. But when Choi focuses on her deeply human characters and their complex bonds, the sister's tale is undeniable. Grade B+. That text by Mary Solosi. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Entertainment Weekly with your reader, Chad. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the Audio Reading Service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
This is a recording library of West Texas Community Update.
Sherwood Church of Christ, 4900 North Dixie Boulevard, offers free clothing on the first Saturday of every month. With so many families in the community are losing their jobs due to COVID and the downturn in oil, the Sherwood Clothes Closet is an opportunity for people to find needed clothing items for the entire family. Hours are 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m.
Texas began as a distinctive place, and it remains so today. In 1973, Texas Monthly Magazine was founded to cover all aspects of the Texas lifestyle. Each week, Recording Library of West Texas volunteers and staff dig through the files of the National Magazine of Texas to bring you Texas Monthly Archives. You'll hear biographical articles about some of the most fascinating Texans, feature stories covering interesting places and things in Texas, and short pieces that are humorous and thought-provoking. Tune in to hear these stories covering contemporary Texas from the 70s, 80s, and 90s that would otherwise be lost to time. Texas Monthly Archives, Thursday nights at 7, Sunday afternoons at 2, and Mondays at midnight on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 62 and clear. Tonight, it will be cloudy with a low in the low 50s. Then, tomorrow, cloudy with a high in the low 70s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the low 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update for Friday, February 26th, 2021. I'm Michael from the Recording Library of West Texas. And coming up, we'll have these stories and more. Declines in U.S. COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations are stalling, CDC director warns. U.S. may now be seeing the beginning effects of the variants, CDC head warns. Pfizer and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines seem to be safe and adverse events are rare, a new CDC analysis finds. Concerning coronavirus variants are likely much more common than testing shows, CDC expert says. Key things to know about Johnson & Johnson's single-dose COVID-19 shot as FDA weighs vaccine's future. Single dose of Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine may protect against asymptomatic infection, preprint study says. When will the U.S. reach herd immunity? And what will it look like? Fully vaccinated people can gather individually with minimal risk, Fauci says. FCC approves $50 a month internet subsidies for pandemic-stricken households. Majority of U.S. adults have been or want to get vaccinated as soon as possible, poll finds. Those stories and more are coming up. First, we'll look at the numbers for this Friday. These are from the Texas Health and Human Services Commission. For Ector County, confirmed cases 8,394, probable cases 7,908, fatalities 322, estimated active cases 1,496, estimated recovered 14,484. Midland County, confirmed cases 16,236, fatalities 238, estimated active cases 549, estimated recovered 15,449. By the way, these Midland County numbers seem to have not been updated since yesterday. Now from the Texas Monthly, or rather the Texas Tribune. Editor's note, reporting of coronavirus cases and deaths was delayed because of last week's winter storm. As a result, we are not noting weekly changes in cases and deaths. Vaccine distribution is also affected. Vaccine doses administered increased. An average of 57,711 vaccine doses have been administered each day in the last week. As of February 24th, 5.5% of Texans has been vaccinated. Hospitalizations decreased by 1,150 patients compared with a week ago. As of February 25th, 6,724 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. New cases. On February 25th, 4,912 new confirmed cases and 2,099 new probable cases were reported. New deaths. On February 25th, 305 new deaths were reported. Now, here are coronavirus briefs. A Food and Drug Administration Advisory Committee is meeting today to review the safety and efficacy of Johnson & Johnson's coronavirus vaccine, setting the stage for FDA authorization as early as this weekend. If cleared, the shot would be the United States' third vaccine against the pathogen, but the only one that provides protection with a single dose. Experts say it could expedite efforts to inoculate the population as virus variants spread. Canada's health regulator approved the coronavirus vaccine from Oxford University and AstraZeneca on Friday, a potential boost for that country's sluggish vaccine rollout. The federal government has agreed to purchase a minimum of 100,000 doses of a neutralizing antibody therapy from Eli Lilly that recently received emergency use authorization for the treatment of newly diagnosed mild to moderate COVID-19 in patients who are at high risk of progressing to severe COVID-19 status or hospitalization, the company announced Friday. The FDA announced on Thursday that it will allow undiluted frozen vials of the Pfizer-BioNTech coronavirus vaccine to be moved and stored at temperatures commonly found in pharmaceutical freezers for a period of up to 2 weeks, reducing the burden of securing very cold storage equipment for vaccination sites and potentially boosting vaccine availability at more locations. Britain's Queen Elizabeth II urged people to get vaccinated, telling doubters to think about other people rather than themselves. The 94-year-old monarch said in a video message that getting vaccinated didn't hurt at all. Public health officials have eagerly awaited the arrival of Johnson & Johnson's vaccine, but supply will continue to limit the U.S. inoculation efforts in the near term. Unprecedented numbers of U.S. students have disappeared during the pandemic, prompting school districts to employ extraordinary efforts to track them down and ensure they are safe. Now to our stories. Decline in U.S. COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations are stalling, CDC director warns, from CNN's Jacqueline Howard and Nicholas Neville. There is concern around a recent stall in the decline of COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations in the United States, which appears now to be leveling off, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, warned during a White House briefing on Friday. Over the last few weeks, cases and hospital admissions in the United States have been coming down since early January, and deaths have been declining in the past week, Walensky said. But the latest data suggest that these declines may be stalling, potentially leveling off at a still very high number. We at CDC consider this a very concerning shift in the trajectory. The most recent 7-day average of cases, about 66,350, is higher than the average reported on Wednesday, Walensky said, adding, "It is important to remember where we are in the pandemic. Things are tenuous." Dr. Anthony Fauci, chief medical advisor to President Biden, said during Friday's briefing that the United States has to be careful when it comes to the spread of the disease. "The point that Dr. Walensky made is critical," Fauci said. "If we plateau at 70,000, we are still at that very precarious position that we were right before the fall surge, where anything that could perturb that could give us another surge. U.S. may now be seeing the beginning effects of these variants, CDC head warns. From CNN's Jacqueline Howard and Nicholas Neville. A recent increase in COVID-19 cases in the United States might be the beginning effects of the spread of coronavirus variants, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, warned during a White House briefing today. CDC has been sounding the alarm about the continued spread of variants in the United States, predicting that variants such as the B.1.1.7 variant, which is thought to be about 50% more transmissible than the wild-type strain, would become the predominant variant of COVID-19 by mid-March. We may now be seeing the beginning effects of these variants in the most recent data, Walensky said during the briefing. Our estimates now indicate that B.1.1.7 accounts for approximately 10% of cases in the United States, up from 1% to 4% a few weeks ago, and prevalence is even higher in certain areas of the country, Walensky added. Earlier this week, new research came out about additional emerging variants in New York, the B.1.526 variant, and in California, the B.1.427 variant, that also appear to spread more easily and are contributing to a large fraction of current infections in those areas, adding urgency to the situation. Walensky said that COVID-19 cases have been increasing for the past 3 days in the United States compared to the prior week. While deaths tend to fluctuate more than cases and hospital admissions, the most recent 7-day average, about 2,000 per day, is slightly higher than the average earlier in the week. Overall, the number of new U.S. COVID-19 cases is beginning to plateau after several weeks of sharp drops, even as hospitalizations and deaths continue to fall. Pfizer and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines seem to be safe and adverse events are rare, new CDC analysis finds, from CNN's Jen Christensen. The current Pfizer and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines seem to be safe and adverse events seem to be rare, according to a presentation at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's Vaccine and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee meeting Friday. The number of reports of people having a reaction to the vaccine seemed to be similar to what was reported during the clinical trials, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Dr. Tom Shimabukuro. The CDC looked at reports of adverse reactions through February 16th. At that point, 55 million doses had been administered in the U.S. There were just more than 100,000 reports, of which 94% were considered non-serious and 6% met the regulatory definition of serious. The reports were gathered in a passive surveillance system co-managed by the CDC and the FDA called V-Safe. The system can rapidly detect safety signals if there is a problem with any of the vaccines. The reactogenicity profiles of the mRNA vaccines in V-Safe are consistent with what was observed in clinical trials, Shimabukuro said. Anaphylaxis does occur, though rarely, and there's no safety signals for any severe adverse events, he added. He added, anaphylaxis, a severe allergic reaction, is also treatable. The CDC guidelines say that people who get the vaccine must stay on location to be observed for 15 to 30 minutes after receiving their shot. That way, if they have breathing problems, trained medical personnel can quickly help. The CDC will continue to monitor the safety of people who receive the vaccines. Concerning coronavirus variants are likely much more common than testing shows, CDC expert says, from CNN's Maggie Fox. Worrying coronavirus variants are likely far more common across the U.S. than testing indicates and could drive new surges in the spread of the virus, a U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention expert said Friday. One first identified in the U.K. called B.1.1.7 is more contagious and might cause more severe disease, although it doesn't seem to be more deadly. CDC epidemiologist Adam McNeil told a meeting of U.S. Food and Drug Administration vaccine advisors. The Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee is meeting now to consider emergency use authorization for Johnson & Johnson's coronavirus vaccine. If it wins EUA, it would become the third vaccine to become available in the U.S. and the first one-shot vaccine. The rise of variants makes vaccination more important than ever, CDC has said. It reports more than 2,100 samples of B117 have been seen in 43 states, Puerto Rico, and Washington, D.C. But there's not nearly enough testing to know the full picture, McNeil told the committee. We may not ever know the full situation in terms of what is going on with the virus, McNeil told the committee. These variants are probably much more widespread through the country, he added. These variants could probably exist throughout the entire United States. Plus, testing is so slow that it's unlikely contact tracing could be used to track the spread of the variants, he said. In countries where the variants have arisen, there have been new surges of viral spread, McNeil noted. We are moving in the right direction with a strong downward trend in the number of cases, he told the committee, which will vote later today on whether to recommend EUA. The FDA could accept or reject that recommendation as early as tonight. We are certainly not out of the woods yet, and we need to continue our focus on mitigation measures and trying to stop the current outbreak, McNeil added. Tests indicate the B117 variant does not evade the effects of the vaccines, but another one, called B1351, which was first identified in South Africa, may weaken the vaccine response somewhat, although testing has suggested current vaccines will protect against that variant also. Key things to know about Johnson & Johnson's single-dose COVID-19 vaccine shot as FDA weighs vaccine's future. From CNN's Jen Christensen and Maggie Fox. U.S. Food and Drug Administration vaccine advisors are meeting now to discuss the potential emergency authorization of a third coronavirus vaccine for the U.S., this one made by Johnson & Johnson's vaccine arm, Janssen Biotech. It's the first step in a process that could end with the new vaccine's rollout early next week. As with the two currently authorized vaccines, advisors and federal agencies are meeting over a weekend to try to get the vaccines to the U.S. public as soon as possible. Here are some key things to know about the vaccine. The vaccine safety. The FDA analysis said the J&J vaccine has a favorable safety profile. The side effects were mostly mild. The most common were pain at the injection site, headache, fatigue, and muscle pain. Some people had hives. Most of these side effects went away in 1 or 2 days. There appeared to be more incidents related to blood clotting and ringing in the ears among those people who got the vaccine in the trial compared to those who didn't. But the FDA notes that data at this time are insufficient to determine a causal relationship between these events and the vaccine. There were no reports of serious allergic reactions with this one. Protection offered by the single-dose shot. With any vaccine, it takes your body a few weeks to build up immunity. Protection doesn't happen right away. With the J&J vaccine, it looks like protection against moderate and severe disease starts about 2 weeks after you get vaccinated. By 4 weeks after the shot, data from the clinical trial showed there were no hospitalizations or deaths. Remember, this is a single-dose shot, so there is no waiting around to get a second to develop full protection. U.S. trials of the J&J shot showed it provides 72% of protection against moderate to severe disease after 1 month. Timing of its availability. The independent group of experts meeting today will determine if the vaccine works and if it's safe. It will then make a recommendation to the FDA. The FDA usually follows its advice. The FDA could sign off on the vaccine as early as today or Saturday. On Sunday afternoon, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, known as ACIP, is scheduled to meet and set guidelines for who should get the vaccine. Their vote is scheduled for 3 p.m. From there, the vaccine could start rolling out of the J&J facility to vaccine centers around the country. Single dose of Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine may protect against asymptomatic infection, preprint study says. From CNN Health's Jamie Gumbrett. More new research suggests a single dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech coronavirus vaccine can protect against asymptomatic coronavirus infection, which could help reduce transmission of the virus. Researchers used PCR tests to screen for coronavirus in vaccinated and non-vaccinated Cambridge University Hospital's healthcare workers who reported to work feeling well. Unvaccinated healthcare workers were positive for coronavirus in 0.80% of tests. Vaccinated healthcare workers less than 12 days from a single dose were positive in 0.37% of tests. And vaccinated healthcare workers who were at least 12 days out from one dose were positive in 0.20% of tests. The study led by Cambridge researchers has not yet been published or peer-reviewed, but the authors call it real-world evidence for a high level of protection against asymptomatic SARS-CoV-2 infection from a single dose of the vaccine. They noted that the more transmissible B.1.1.7 variant, first identified in the United Kingdom, dominated at the time of their research, and prior infection was relatively low among the population tested. A large study released this week by Public Health England, PHE, found that one dose of the Pfizer vaccine provides high levels of protection against infection and symptomatic disease, reducing the risk of infection by 72% after 3 weeks, while two vaccine doses reduced the risk of infection by 85%. PHE's SIREN study involved healthcare workers younger than 65. These studies are very encouraging because they suggest that the variants will prevent the spread of the virus. Lawrence Young, a professor of molecular oncology at Warwick Medical School, said in a response to the Science Media Center in the UK, "You can't spread the virus if you're not infected, and these studies show that the vaccine blocks infection in individuals who don't have symptoms but could pass on the infection." When will the U.S. reach herd immunity, and what will it look like? From CNN's Deirdre McPhillips. A year into the COVID-19 pandemic, it appears that trends in the United States have finally shifted in a positive direction. New cases, hospitalizations, and deaths are dropping rapidly, and the supply of available vaccines is growing. The country could be well on its way to herd immunity, the point at which enough people are protected against a disease that it cannot spread through the population. But it may take months to get there, and nobody expects it will feel like an overnight return to our lives before the pandemic. More than 66 million shots have been administered, according to the latest federal data, with nearly 8% of the U.S. population fully vaccinated. Promises from manufacturers indicate that the U.S. should have enough vaccine supply to cover everyone by June. More than a quarter of the population may already have natural immunity after previous infection, and that number may be much higher than official counts show. However, some new variants threaten progress, potentially lessening protection offered by vaccines and skirting some degree of natural immunity. Vaccine hesitancy may also create some limitations. To understand how these factors may play into the future timeline of the pandemic, CNN spoke with five experts. Dr. Arturo Casadevall, chair of molecular microbiology and immunology at Johns Hopkins University, Justin Lessler, associate professor of epidemiology at Johns Hopkins University, Jessica Malate Rivera, science communications lead at the COVID Tracking Project, Dr. Anish Mehta of the Emory Vaccine Center, and Dr. Christopher Murray, director of the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation. Fully vaccinated people can gather individually with minimal risk, Fauci says. From CNN's Christopher Rios. Two fully vaccinated people can gather individually with minimal risk, Dr. Anthony Fauci told CNN's Chris Cuomo Thursday. You can start getting together as individual people, even though the risk is not zero. The risk becomes extremely low when you have both parties vaccinated, said Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, has not released guidelines about gathering with other vaccinated people. My professional judgment is that when my daughter wants to come in here and she is doubly vaccinated, I'm going to have her over to the house, and I'm going to give her a big hug that I haven't been able to do for a year, Fauci said. The U.S. has administered 68,274,117 vaccine doses, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. It has recorded over 28 million cases and 508,307 deaths, the highest country total. FCC approves $50 a month internet subsidies for pandemic-stricken households, from CNN's Brian Fung. The Federal Communications Commission on Thursday approved final rules for a new broadband subsidy program that could help struggling families pay for internet service during the pandemic. The agency's $3.2 billion emergency broadband benefit program provides eligible low-income households with up to $50 per month credit on their internet bills through their provider until the end of the pandemic. In tribal areas, eligible households may receive up to $75 per month, and the program also provides eligible households up to $100 off of one computer or tablet. The congressionally created program is aimed at closing the digital divide, which has become painfully apparent over the past year, as millions of Americans have been forced to work and learn remotely. For years, industry critics have pointed to inaccurate broadband maps and insufficient funding for rural areas as key hurdles preventing much of the country from getting online. Last year, Congress passed a coronavirus relief package that contained provisions for the FCC's new program, and the FCC has established a fresh task force to improve the data it gathers on broadband availability. Signups for the pandemic internet benefits could begin within the next 60 days, said Jessica Rosenworcel, the FCC's acting chairwoman, after the agency establishes the systems needed to work with internet providers. This is a program that will help those at risk of digital disconnection, Rosenworcel said in a statement. It will help those sitting in cars and parking lots just to catch a Wi-Fi signal to go online for work. It will help those lingering outside the library with a laptop just to get a wireless signal for remote learning. It will help those who worry about choosing between paying a broadband bill and paying rent or buying groceries. Households eligible for the program include those who use food stamps, are on Medicaid, or have received a Pell Grant. Also eligible are those who have lost their jobs during the pandemic. Majority of adults have been or want to get vaccinated as soon as possible, poll finds, from CNN Health's Ashley Ahn. More than half of Americans said they have already gotten at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine or want to get vaccinated as soon as possible, the Kaiser Family Foundation reported Friday. A survey by the foundation found that 55% of polled U.S. adults have either received a shot or say they want to get vaccinated as soon as possible. That's up from 47% in mid-January and 34% in early December. Friday's KFF Vaccine Monitor report also showed that compared to December, all surveyed demographic groups now have more desire to be vaccinated. The KFF Vaccine Monitor survey, conducted from February 15th to the 23rd, included 1,874 adults with oversamples of about 500 black adults and 500 Hispanic adults. Black and Hispanic adults and people 18 to 29 are most likely to say they want to wait and see how the vaccine works among the general public before they get it. More than a third of black adults and 26% of surveyed Hispanic adults say they want to wait and see, compared to 18% of surveyed white adults. The survey found 22% of those polled will either definitely not get vaccinated or only get the vaccine if required for work, school, or other activities. This remains consistent with the figures recorded in January and December, suggesting this group holds firm views. Republicans, essential workers not in healthcare, and individuals living in rural areas were most likely to say they will definitely not get vaccinated. While there has been an overall shift towards greater enthusiasm for getting a COVID-19 vaccination, the demographic groups that are the most enthusiastic, most cautious, and most resistant remain similar to those reported in January, the researchers wrote in the report. In light of the anticipated U.S. Food and Drug Administration emergency use authorization for the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 single-shot vaccine, the poll found that about a quarter of individuals who wish to wait and see before getting inoculated said they would be more likely to get a vaccine that requires only one dose. The poll found serious side effects to be people's biggest concerns about receiving the vaccine, with over half of unvaccinated individuals sharing this concern. About one-third of unvaccinated people also say they feared they could get COVID-19 from the vaccine, something that is biologically impossible, missing work due to side effects, or paying out of pocket. These fears were more prevalent among black and Hispanic adults. And that is your coronavirus update for this Friday, February 26, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael, and coming up next, we'll bring you USA Today with national news. At 3 o'clock, it's our two-hour local news broadcast, and here are some of the programs, or rather articles, that our volunteers will be reading from the local newspapers. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, winter storm. Midland Freshwater District winterized equipment before storm hit. Real estate. Report states political climate impacts home sales in Midland. Local. Midland author releases book about racial issues and healing. From the Odessa American, final first dose at Ratliff is Sunday. Fathead Meats helping Jesus House. Bring canned food and get a free sandwich on Saturday. And Black History Exhibit set for Sunday. Those articles and more coming up at 3 o'clock. More news at 6 o'clock from the Wall Street Journal. And this note, we are going to begin broadcasting the coronavirus update 30 minutes later due to still iffy internet connections and some technical issues. So, beginning Monday, the coronavirus update will air at 1:30 p.m., 30 minutes later than it does now, to give us a better chance to do the production it takes to put the show together, as well as work through technical issues that have been cropping up, especially since the winter storm. So, once again, beginning Monday, the coronavirus update will begin permanently airing 30 minutes later at 1:30 p.m. As always, thank you for joining us. Have a great weekend, stay safe, and we'll speak again on Monday. Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter-Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
AARP Foundation Tax Aid is looking to expand its team of volunteers for the upcoming tax season. Tax Aid, celebrating its 52nd year, offers free in-person preparation and assistance to anyone, especially those 50 and older, who can't afford a tax preparation service. Volunteers make a difference in their communities by assisting many older, lower-income taxpayers and their families who might otherwise miss out on the tax credits and deductions they've earned. Every level of experience is welcome. Volunteer tax preparers complete tax preparation training and IRS certification. The program is offered at senior centers in Odessa and Midland. Local information and details can be obtained by contacting Bob Schuler, District Coordinator, at 432-362-7204.